Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. Happy Veterans Day.
Yes, happy everyone. Veterans Day. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you to everyone who served.
Yeah, we always...
Is serving.
Yeah.
Are was serving. Thank you so
be
much.
Be served. Those that got served. No, we always start with some sort of joke here at the beginning, or some food or something. But all seriousness aside, or actually all joking aside, whatever.
Yes,
seriously.
Yes.
Major hostilities of World War were formally ended in the 11th hour, the 11th day, on the 11th month, yep, in 1918. So in 1919, Woodrow Wilson started the first Veterans Day.
Yeah.
So I love USA. I love America.
Yes.
Now, as we release this, we know who the president is.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Me and Rob are recording this a few weeks prior.
Yeah.
But hopefully we know who our president is
hopefully
by the time this drops.
Hopefully we at least know who won at this point.
Exactly.
Yes.
So hopefully all, America's in good spirits.
And I'm sure, whoever you are listening, congratulations. I'm sure your guy won.
Your guy won. Yeah. You know? And for those of y'all that didn't, we feel with you too. So
yeah.
There you go.
That's right.
We love all. On
We're
we
here to unite, not divide.
So, yeah. So, happy Veterans Day.
Yes.
We have saved this song for Veterans Day.
Yes.
So, we recorded this. We got an interview with the artist. We'll just go ahead and tell you. We're doing American Pie.
American
with Pie. Don McLean. So, we interviewed him.
Jeez.
Back so long ago.
Months ago.
Months and months ago. And we were like, we have to save this for the most American of days. And
yeah,
we didn't release on the 4th of July.
Right.
Because that was when we were in our break. So we're like, duh, Veterans Day.
Veterans Day,
so
absolutely.
We're holding it till Veterans Day. So we've been waiting for this moment. So
yeah. So to celebrate America and to say thank you to veterans everywhere, we are covering American Pie. Not really to say thank you to veterans, but it just happens to coincide.
Yeah, it happens to line up. We love this song, as does everybody.
I mean,
in America and around the world.
Literally one of the most beloved songs in modern music history.
Absolutely.
I mean, we say that all the time, but this is truly one of those songs. And we can't wait. We can't wait to get it to you. So typically we play a little bit of the song up front. And typically we play about a verse and a chorus. In this case, the artist asked us not to play that much.
But out of respect to the artist, he did give a we talked to his person, and we are allowed to play 15 seconds.
That's right.
So
we got it up to 15 seconds
so
that we can play. So we are going to do our best to play you enough of American Pie. I think we can do it.
Let's do it.
I think we can do
it. You guys
know.
Here's our 15 seconds of American Pie.
All right.
A long, long time ago. This'll be the day that I die.
Did you guys get all that?
That was awesome. That
okay.
was American Pie.
Wow.
By Don McLean.
By Don
McLean.
So I can't believe we got it all to,
that was amazing.
To fit. I heard every word.
That was good.
So, man, that part about the jester, that's really...
That got me.
Yeah.
That got me. Drove my Chevy.
That's right. That was American Pie by Don McLean.
Okay, I do have a Drove My Chevy thing.
Okay.
What if they, like... Do you think... Okay, Chevy.
Yeah.
Drove my Chevy to the levee. What do you do if it's a Ford? What do you do if it's a Dodge?
I drove my Ford to the fjord?
To the ward?
To the ward.
I think this is the best one. Drove his Ram to the dam?
There
that
you go.
That one works.
I mean, that basically is the same.
Yeah, that's the same concept.
You know? Yeah. I was thinking, there used to be a commercial, and I don't know if these were before or after American Pie. The thing of baseball, something, apple pie, and Chevrolet. You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever
No.
seen those ads? I might have to just look it up so I can play. It was literally a song. I can't remember what the second thing was, but that was...
It's baseball, something,
baseball,
apple pie.
Something, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Baseball, something, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Let me think of something that's American, and we'll try to guess. Y'all that haven't
right?
heard the song like me, let's
yes.
think and let's take a quick guess.
This is like the... Fancy feast.
That's right.
Break me off a piece of that Chrysler car. No, so it's like what's the other thing that's missing? You know,
because bald eagles.
As American Pie as I mean, it's an American as apple pie.
As American as the blues. As American as apple pie.
Yeah. So it baseball.
Ice cream. That's another
food. It could
food.
Be. It could be baseball, ice cream, apple pie, and Chevrolet. That could be it.
There you go.
I'm going to look it up, and we'll see if you're right. Okay, here it is. Oh, okay. Okay, this is from the 70s. So this is after American Pie. So okay. I'm going to say American Pie influenced these. These are from, the, I guess, the mid-70s. Oh, of course.
America, what's your favorite sport?
Baseball.
Sandwich.
Hot dog.
Pie.
Apple.
Hot
dogs. And what's your favorite car, America?
Chevrolet.
Let me see, that's baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet, huh?
Right.
Well, you sure sound like America to me.
We are.
Well, then you better tell me again, because I just might forget.
We love baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
That sounds like a Schoolhouse Rock song.
Yes, it does.
That's baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
They signed you, Bill. Now you're a law.
I think you better tell me again.
That's literally all. They put a key change in this. It's so long. It's like a 6-minute Chevrolet commercial that they would put on, in, you know, during football games or whatever. Baseball, hot dogs.
There you go. That's
American. Is a hot dog an American thing?
Sure.
Is it? Isn't it a Frankfurter?
Probably.
Isn't that? I mean, it's German, right? It's so German. It's not.
It's American as Germany.
Anyway, okay, all right, so now we learned a little something else.
Nine.
Let's get into American Pie by Don McLean. It was number one on the Billboard Hot 100. It was number one in the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart in Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. Number two in the U.K., and a 1991 reissue charted again at number 12. It was, I always wonder about if there's any bitterness about songs about America, and by extension, what a ton of people in, people say America when they really mean the United States, but we know, okay, we know what, we know what they mean. But I always wonder if songs about the UK, if there's ever some like bitterness, you know, but I realize we've become close again, but there was a period of time where I imagine this song would not have gone to
resonated
number two
as well.
In the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although it's a sad song, truly, so maybe so. They're like, good for a plane crash, you know? This is number five, and we've talked about this list before. This is number five on the Recording Industry Association of America Songs of the Century list. So the songs of the 20th century, according to the
number
RIAA,
five.
Number five. You remember
Did you
any
have
of the
list?
Top four? I've got the top ones after that.
I don't remember.
Number four is Respect.
Okay.
Technically the Otis Redding version
Not
of Respect.
Not the Aretha version.
Not the Aretha version. Unless it was done by writer and not artist.
Maybe.
But the list I saw had the Otis Redding picture. Anyway, number three, This Land Is Your Land by Woody Guthrie.
There we go.
Number two, White Christmas.
Okay.
And number one, you want to take a guess? It makes sense, but I feel like it's hard to guess. It's a soundtrack song, and it's not I Will Always Love You.
Okay.
Classic, very classic. Nope. It's Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh, okay, there we go. Judy.
Makes total sense.
Judy.
Come on, Judy. So, yeah, this is number five on that list. That's how important American Pie is, and that's how psyched we were to talk to Don McLean.
Oh my goodness. Y'all hang around for the interview. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
He was a lot of fun.
We talked to some people who are maybe like currently a little more famous, quote unquote, than Don McLean maybe. You know, we've talked to some people, right?
Okay.
Like we talked to Dave Barnes that he's currently more famous
than
Don McLean. You know what I'm saying? But there's nobody that we have talked to who is more revered, I think, than Don McLean.
That's good.
When you tell other musicians, we're talking to Don McLean next week, they go, whoa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a big marker for us. So to get to speak to him for a few minutes was a real treasure. American Pie is number 210 on the Billboard all-time 600.
There we go.
Kaboom.
Somebody making the list.
Yay. So it's number five in the songs of the century, which is songs from the last 100 years.
But number 10.
Of the 20th century. But number 210.
210.
On the all-time 600 of the Billboard chart, which celebrates only the last 60 years.
Okay.
So I guess there could be a lot of songs from the 21st century on that list.
Maybe.
Or it's just a whack list. I'm going to go with the latter. American Pie broke the record for the longest number one song in length. Not like it was on there the longest, but the longest song in length to go number one. Do you know what the previous holder of that would have been?
Before
1971.
So that would have been probably Hey Jude.
Yes, it was Hey Jude by the Beatles, which was like 6 minutes or so. And American Pie is clocking in at a tidy 8 minutes 15 and 33 seconds. That's right, at a tidy 15 seconds clean. Yeah, 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes for the full version of American Pie. And I can't imagine really a world in which you wouldn't hear or want to hear the full version of American Pie.
Right.
But it is technically, originally, it was a parts one and two on an A side, B side.
You had to actually flip the 45 over because the song was so long to listen to it.
And on radio stations, they would sometimes even cut it further than that. That they would cut off. I saw Don McLean saying,
which verse do they cut?
They cut off. They would start at the up tempo part where it comes in. Did you write the book of love?
That's how they start the song?
Yes, I believe once it comes in, unless they just cut out the first verse. But I think what he said was they only kept the up tempo parts.
Okay,
and then they would only played I think two verses.
Goodness gracious.
And this is like eight verses, and then they would just play like a couple of verses and the last chorus out. So like just I can't imagine it would offend me to hear the song that way. It received airplay at first as a commentary on the closing of the famed music venue, the Fillmore East in New York City. Mm-hmm. And a station started playing it there or played it there as a, you know, as a, gee, this sucks, you know, about the closing of the Fillmore East. Yeah. Legendary. There's so many great live albums and concerts, you know, from the Fillmore.
Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East, one of my favorites. So.
Exactly. Gosh, there's so much
where
to get
do we start?
Into. I think we have to start with The Day the Music Died.
Okay,
probably,
yeah, that's good.
Right? So let's dig into The Day the Music Died. This would be February 3rd, 1959, the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the big bopper, J.P. Richardson, a fellow J.P.
Great initials.
I hate to lose a fellow J.P. anytime. They were killed in a plane crash in Iowa in 1959. And then roughly 10 years later, Don McLean writes American Pie, the song. His recollection about the events sort of tied in with what he later called a sort of morality song about the – it's kind of American Pie is sort of end of the innocence in 1970.
That's good.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If the end of the innocence had come out in 1970 instead of 1992 or whatever, 1991 – it's kind of that,
that's
right?
Good.
But a lot of mystery surrounding the lyrics, and we'll get into some of that. And finally, and Don, well, we'll get into
who
some
the
of
characters
that.
Are.
Yeah. But The Day the Music Died, which came to be known as that because of the song, mm-hmm. it wasn't called that before Don McLean wrote American Pie. Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper, they had all been touring together along with a couple other acts. And the long, cold bus rides were killing them. They were just all together on a bus. And, you know, it wasn't like now when you've got, like, super climate-controlled,
comfy seats and televisions.
Yeah. So we're in the late 50s, and they are, I imagine, probably not riding the newest buses either.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think about the worst school bus you ever rode, and it's probably something like that, you know, an army bus they're riding around in. Some of them had caught the flu, and there were even cases of frostbite. Like, it was just not great, you know, conditions for these young performers. So after their performance at Clear Lake, Buddy Holly decided to charter a small plane to get a few of them to the next gig in less time and with less discomfort, and so that they could wash their clothes. They just wanted to be able to, like, for a second, and you know, literally, like, can we get somewhere where we can have some time to do some laundry, you know? So originally the plane was supposed to be carrying two members of Buddy Holly's band, Tommy Alsup and the now legendary country performer Waylon Jennings, who was in Buddy Holly's band at the time. However, Waylon Jennings gave up his seat to the Big Bopper, who had the flu, and Tommy Alsup lost his seat. Do you know how?
Game, maybe?
In a
card?
Coin toss.
Coin toss.
Lost his seat to Ritchie Valens in a coin toss.
Wow.
How? Yeah. And they have, you know, both.
Do you know if it was heads or tails?
Oh, I don't. That's I don't know.
If you guys out there know how it landed,
that's right.
Let us know.
Any Ritchie Valens historians out there. So, So Big Bopper and Richie Valens end up joining Buddy Holly on the plane, along with the pilot, Roger Peterson. And soon after they took off, Roger Peterson lost control of the plane and crashed in a cornfield, and it immediately killed Peterson and all the passengers. Richie Valens was only 8 months into his recording career, but he had already had two massive hits with Donna and La Bamba. Which became, you know...
Have you seen the Lou Diamond Phillips movie?
I never have. No,
guy from Stand and Deliver, for those of you guys that are wondering who we're talking about.
Yeah. He's like a... he's like the... have you seen Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
He's like the Hispanic Liu Kang, you know? In
Liu Kang.
In La Bamba.
Finish him.
But, yeah, he's 8 months with two massive hits. And you know, La Bamba sort of opened the door for that, like, sort of Spanglish rock and roll.
That's good.
You know? And then the Big Bopper.
The Los Lonely Boys owe a lot to La Bamba.
Yes, and Los Lobos.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? Like all that kind of stuff.
We would never have How Far Is Heaven if it wasn't for, well, there's one bad thing.
I was going to say, don't make me change my opinions on this. The Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson, was a singer and songwriter who, in addition, he's like the senior statesman of the group, right, of the touring group. And he was a singer and songwriter who, in addition to having hits like Chantilly Lace, Big Bopper's Wedding, he also wrote George Jones's first number one hit, White Lightning.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And you guessed it, Johnny Preston's Running Bear.
Oh, my goodness, it's back again.
I cannot believe.
He can't escape this song.
He wrote Running Bear, the most offensive song on the all-time 600 list.
Right.
Waylon Jennings is quoted as having some chilling words before the incident. When Buddy Holly heard that Jennings and Alsop had given up their plane seats, Buddy Holly said to them, "Well, I hope your old bus freezes up again."
Oh, my goodness.
To which Waylon replied, "Well, I hope your old plane crashes."
Goodness gracious.
And he said that has haunted him, you know, I mean, every day of his life.
Goodness
since
gracious.
Then.
I didn't know that.
Can you imagine? I mean, if you were... You would become superstitious if you were not, if you had said, "I hope your plane crashes."
I would never wish a bad thing on anyone, even in his joke. Yeah.
Anyway. Just sucks to even think about. Just imagine. So I'm trying to, because that was 1959.
Okay.
And one of the things that Don McLean has said about the sort of the inspiration, there's a lot of sadness. And there's some anger in this song. You know what I mean? It's a sing along, you know, whatever, and it feels great. But it's really
It's a little darker than the presentation of the vocal and the music let off. Like if you sit and read and write, which we'll dig in a little bit on the lyrics, and we'll give you some takes. But it's a heavier.
So there's
take.
A lot of layers going on there, and part of what he said was his. You know, one of his motivating factors, I guess you would say, is that he said, basically, you know, these three huge artists just died. And he said it was like life just went on. And he was like, "Why is life just going on? Don't you guys know what just happened?" Mm-hmm. You know, like we should be sadder about this.
Yeah.
But he said at the time, rock and roll or even just pop music in general was still a novelty. Mm-hmm. It was like fidget spinners. If there was a plane crash that killed fidget spinners, you know, people would go, "Ah, oh, that sucks. Give me the new thing." You know, and he said it felt more like that people didn't stop and go, this was really a loss.
Yeah. The impact didn't hit till later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he took it upon himself to tell everybody, "Hey, this is the impact that this should have. This was the day the music died."
Yeah.
You know? And so his song helped to
good job for him
really immortalize that and bring that sense of weightiness and grief to an event that he felt didn't really get, you know, what it was owed.
If he doesn't do this song, does somebody else go back and make a big deal out of this song?
Yeah, who even knows? I mean, no, probably not, right?
Not out of the song, but out of the moment. I
mean. Yeah, right, exactly. No, he felt it was owed to them because of the way it impacted him. And he just said, you know, at school it was like everybody went on with their business because it was, I guess, you know, pop stars were dispensable or you know, it was just a fad. That's what he said, right? You know, this kind of music was just still a fad, and it wasn't, you know, man, this music means everything to me for everybody yet, like it is now, you know. So To kind of put it into some modern perspective, I did a little thinking. I asked you to do a little thinking, and not to be, I don't want to come across macabre or you know, anything like that. I just to put it in some modern perspective for the modern listener. And I realize our average age listener is not the modern listener, mm-hmm. quote unquote. But I thought about what pop stars of today.
So we had to pick three.
Yeah. If this plane crash happened today, who would be on that plane to put it in some perspective to 2020?
I forgot about the homework until right before we started. I was like, I got to jot these down. So these are off the top of my head, the ones that I think were kind of the three biggest. If you put them on a plane, like everybody would kind of freak out about if they died. Drake, I think, number one. Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber.
Wow.
I think you throw those three on there, and that's a pretty big – maybe not as much Biebs now. He's maybe lost a little relevance, but in name.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It is. I'm not sure that it would be all three of those.
Did you go different genre?
Well, I did mine a little. No, mine's all pop. But I did.
And I did guys just to keep it guys.
Yes, and
I would have thrown Ariana Grande in there.
I did one girl. Ariana.
Not that I want to throw her on the plane. I'm just saying.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. But that yes. So you know, I thought about okay because the group of them was sort of. One person that is established and has been around for a while, but is still not old by any means.
Okay.
Still young, but a more established star. And then, somebody,
I see how you did one like to match up with one.
To match up sort of with each one.
Just getting started 8 months in or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
And then one that's been around for, you know, a few years and had great success. And then one that's brand new.
Okay. Go ahead.
So mine would be the big bopper JP Richardson equivalent would be Harry Styles.
Okay.
He's definitely been around for a decade with One Direction and now a solo career. Billie Eilish. Has been around for a couple of years and had massive success.
Okay.
And then Lil Nas X. Okay. Like, just happened.
Just came.
He just happened.
Yeah.
But had a huge impact. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If all three of them went down on a plane right now, it would, to me, represent the same kind of impact as...
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Although even then, I think
y'all let us know on our socials who you think.
Even in your world, mm-hmm. right? So if you were 13 years old delivering papers, and you pick up your paper in the morning to go deliver, and it says plane crash kills these three performers, when you were 13, mm-hmm. who would those performers have been that would have made you? Stew on this for 10 years and then write an 8-minute song about it.
Yeah.
Who would that have been for you? So I think of it like, I mean, I can't even do it off the top of my head, and I would probably cry if I did, you know? Like,
it's a little too close to home when we're revealing this with the passing of Eddie Van Halen.
Yes.
Let's just be real on that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So let us know. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. Like I said, I don't mean this in a gross way, or it just to put it in some perspective to your own life, what this meant to Don McLean. You know, let us know at Twitter, at Great Song Pod, or, you know, on Facebook in the group, Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly.
And don't worry, we're going to build this energy and excitement. For those of you that listen to it, we are an exciting, fun show.
No, I'm going down. I'm burning this thing to the ground.
We do have an interview with Don McLean later on, and we do have another game, which we hinted at last week.
No,
our
brother.
Version of Stump the Genius, but this time we're cheering for Rob as the genius.
Brother.
On we go.
All right. Why don't we... Do you want to meet the band
before
we
get into the song? Yeah, we can go ahead and then we'll talk about the song. So let's go ahead and meet the band.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, we're going to meet the band that played on American Pie. American Pie.
Here's America. What's your favorite kind of pie?
Oh, man.
I think the thought American
Everybody
pie is
apple,
right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what it, I mean. Yeah. It was in a commercial.
Can I do oatmeal cream pie?
No. I mean, that's funny
Little
as
Debbie.
Heck. That's funny as heck, but no.
Pequeña Debs. We'll go with Little Debbie oatmeal cream pie. The final answer. How about you?
I think if we're talking about what pie is the most American, it's apple.
I don't know what Boston cream pie is.
It's gross.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's not good.
On we go. On piano, Paul Griffin played piano on Bob Dylan's. On Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited. Also played with Steely Dan, John Denver, Wilson. Ooh, another plane crash.
Yeah.
Steely Dan, John Denver, Wilson Pickett. This guy's a legend. On guitar, David Spinoza, James Taylor's right-hand man on Walking Man. He did stuff with John, Paul, and Ringo, all but George.
Okay.
Maybe being a guitar player, George is a little bit more
true
selective. But this guy's great. Acoustic guitar on Honesty by Billy Joel on 52nd Street.
Nice.
Which, for a second album, I mean, that song sandwiched between Big Shot and My Life. Come on. I mean, yeah. Honesty's a great song. On bass, Rob Stoners is his nickname, Robert Rothstein.
That was my nickname in high school.
Rob Stoners. Opened for Dylan in the mid-70s, and then he would sit in with Dylan on bass. So, like, he would open for Dylan and then sit in and be his bass player.
And then he would sneak out into the crowd and steal money from hippies. And that's how he got his nickname, Rob Stoners.
Bass player on the Rolling Thunder Review. One of the greatest tours ever. It's Dylan, Joan Baez, Ramblin' Jack Elliott. He does Viola Carpenter. Anyway, he was the bass player for that crew. On drums, Roy Markowitz. Stuff with Leonard Cohen, Carol Bayer Sager, Todd Rundgren, Jeff Beck. I'm forgetting how to talk with Free Creek, working in a coal mine. Great Phil. Go to Second 55 if you're listening. Instrumental greatness with Jeff Beck on guitar and dual organist Moogie Klingman and Bob Smith. Look up Working on a Coal Mine if you want to hear Roy Markowitz at his favorite. And then the West 44th Street Rhythm and Noise Choir is the chorus that sings that.
Okay.
Who we talked to a little bit with Don McLean in that group, Pete Seeger, Carly Simon, James Taylor, come on.
Yeah,
and we'll ask him about. And then the vocalist and acoustic guitar player, Dandy Don. Not Dandy. That would be Don.
Don Meredith.
That would be Don Meredith. Right, yeah. But we'll go with Don McLean. Yeah. You guys, well, let's go ahead and kick it to some time. Y'all hang out with us and Don McLean.
And then we're going to come back.
And then we'll come back, talk about the song.
We still got a lot to talk
play
about.
Play a game. So but let's jump on in and let you talk to him for a bit.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we were not lying. We actually have on the other line the one and only Don McLean. Mr. McLean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And I think you're the first guest that I've ever called Mr. You're that important. I think normally I go first names, but I just called you Mr. McLean. So
as long as you don't call me Miss, I'll be happy.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. One of the things I wanted to ask about is in an age when events and songs sort of don't get remembered from one week to the next, to have written songs that are so revered that 50 years later people are still viewing as iconic songs, what does that feel like for you?
It's, you know, I never really did anything other than try to write the most timeless thing I could write and the most beautiful thing that I could do. You know, in a world of pop music, it's not always pretty. You know, a lot of hard driving stuff and heavy duty guitars. I love all that stuff, but I like beautiful melodies. And even in American Pie, I mean, there's a lot of melody in that first opening bit. There's a lot of, you know, about four songs in there. You
sure.
know.
Yeah.
So it's something that I always was in love with, and I just followed my instincts really, and did the very best I could. I was not always, you know, I mean, a lot of other artists were more popular than I was. Cat Stevens, you know, he was on the cover of Rolling Stone, and I was never on the cover of Rolling Stone, but my songs have outlasted a lot of people.
Sure.
So they ended up having legs, and I suppose it's because they're pretty.
That's true.
Well, that is true. So speaking of beautiful, I was saving this question for later, but this is a perfect segue into it. Sister Fatima from the American Pie album is one of the most interesting songs melodically, musically, that I have just ever heard. It just sucks me in.
Thank you.
Sister Fatima has God-given powers, and on 42nd Street, a shop that sells flowers is her palace. Come and be here.
The first time I heard it, I literally, it faded out at the end, and I said out loud, oh no, like this can't be over yet. I rewound it and I played it over and over again. If you would just tell me a little bit about that story and what yielded that just beautiful piece of music.
Well, you know, I was in the middle of one thing that happens to me. There's two things that happen. First of all, a record label wants a record of my songs. That doesn't happen all the time, but it happens sometimes. So this was the second album after my first album, Tapestry. And I don't know if I had American Pie written or not, but I was wide open, you know, and there was a ton of pressure on it because Tapestry had done very well for a first album. It did just what it was supposed to do. And so I was, you know, looking for things to write about and ideas and so on. And I'll never forget it. I was walking down. I don't take the subway anymore, but I was taking the subway and I went down the stairs there and there was this circular and it said, Sister Fatima, that she'll do this for you and do that for you. She'll cure your ills and answer all your questions and so on and so forth. And I thought, wow. And I, so, you know, all about the American Pie album, a lot of it is really this outsider, you know, it's a biographical album in a strange way because I'm outside of everything. And so here's that same person looking for salvation through in the taffeta booth, you know?
Yeah.
And so I tell, you know, I couldn't write that song now if I lived another 100 years. You know what I'm saying? But I get songs in on my radio at different times in my life. And the last album I made, Botanical Gardens, has some things I'm really very happy with, and the records turned out very well. Also, that's a fine record. But I'm not going to write another one, not for a long time, because the process has to get started now. Warner Brothers, they're going to put out an album in the fall of songs that I did not write. If they say to me, wow, it did very well, we want you to write another album, well, I'll get excited, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It may happen.
And speaking of, like, not exactly new albums, but sort of, tell our listeners a little bit about the new recording deal that you've signed with Time Life.
Well, what I have done through the years is I have made reversion clauses in my contracts. So whenever I would put an album out, I'd give the company 5 or 8, 7 years, something like that, to, you know, to put it out, and then it would come back to me. I would own it. So I had 11 of these albums and several TV specials, because I always do that. And they were kind of piling up on me, you know, and so I said, and then I had this new album. So I got my folks in Nashville. I said, why don't you find a record company? So they went to Warner's, and Warner's loved the record, so they're going to come out with it. But then they're affiliated with Time Life, and Time Life said, well, we want to put these albums, you know, on all the streaming platforms, and as well as a lot of these videos. So we signed a deal with them, and I'm really relieved because it would have cost me a whole lot to get people to do this and probably taken the better part of a year to do it properly. So they've got this channel up, they've got everything going, they have their own PR people, and we're going great guns. So it was a really lovely, a fortuitous event.
I know you hinted at when we were talking about the American Pie album, you talked about Tapestry, which is your first album. That's actually probably my favorite of your albums. That's got the original Castles in the Air, and bass player and producer on there was Jerry Corbett of Corbett and Daniels, Charlie Daniels. So I'm a big fan of that project.
Thank you.
How has your stylistically, even from writing process to recording, changed from album one of Tapestry to everything as a collection in Time Life? Like, talk us about through that, how that looks like, what that looks like from Tapestry to today, how that's changed.
Well, nothing compares to the Tapestry album. It took me forever to get out. I wrote lots of songs and then recorded them and then took them off. I was always switching around material. The album didn't finally get finished until about a year after I started it or more. And probably half the songs were new that I put on there because I was evolving very quickly. Also, if you listen to the Castles in the Air that's on there, and then the one that was a hit
in 81. They're completely different. Different tempos, different. It's the same song, but two lives.
Yeah. But the thing you'll hear is that the first version is a very nervous Don. I was a nervous wreck. That album was so hard to make. I had to go out to Berkeley, California, and a lot of times we'd have police escapades where there would be a tear gas and, you know, all that kind of stuff, because the Berkeley was on fire, and the musicians would come to the studio having been gassed by the cops.
Wow.
And,
holy cow.
Yeah, it was the country was on fire in those years, 69, 70, 68, in there. They really came, really were, the country was exploding. And I had plenty of bomb scares as well as I was always busy singing, you know. So then there was the diversity of all the material on that Tapestry album. And then there was the fact that record company after record company wouldn't put it out because they, you know, how does Three Flights Up fit with Tapestry? And how does Tapestry fit with Castles in the Air? And how, they're all different songs, but that's kind of what I do. I do different things, you know, many different things, and they'll all be on one record. I've never done a similar style record, and that's the key to a good album, is to have everything be sort of similar in style. But somehow it hung together, and we got the record out. And once it came out, I remember coming to see my mother. I think I was sick one time, and the album had just come out, and she lived in New Rochelle, and I lived in upstate New York. But I said, I'm going to have to see my mother instead, because I had like 102 temperature. And I went there, when I got there, I turned the radio on, and they were playing the whole album on WPLJ in New York.
Wow, that doesn't happen anymore.
That was a heck of a thrill. Let me tell you that. I'll never forget it. I called my mother because my father had died quite a few years before. It was just her and me, and she knew how much I wanted this, and here it was. I said, listen to this. They're playing the whole thing on the radio. Man. So it was huge.
Yeah. So it's funny that you say that you are a really nervous Don kind of on some of that first album, because one of the things that I really enjoy about your music, especially the more up-tempo songs, is that while obviously you've put a lot of thought and careful work into these songs, your delivery is so natural that they almost sound extemporaneous, like they're an extremely well-curated stream of consciousness. Is that kind of cavalier delivery something you've purposely cultivated, or is that just Don being Don?
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm trying to cool myself down. Maybe I go too far. Or I don't know. But I was like Don Knotts. I mean, on that studio, I was a wreck. And money was being paid, and you know, things were happening, and I was jumping out of my skin. That was the way I was in those days, anyway. And as I worked with producers, they would kind of calm me down, you know, and get me to do things. You know, I already knew I was going to do a lot of takes of these things until they were absolutely perfect. But they helped a great deal, you know. And, everything was a thrill with that record. I mean, because I did everything on that record. I had just me and bass. I had myself in a nice little unit, like on Magdalene Lane. I had strings on And I Love You So and a number of other songs on there, No Reason for Your Dreams and Bad Girl and some of these ones. I was just with the guitar, like I think it was on Circus Song, so and Three Flights Up. So I got to use all sorts of different approaches. Just upright bass, I think, on Orphans of Well. I love upright bass, and I'm crazy about upright bass players. So again, it's that mixture of everything. And then the second record, that momentum kept going, and it just exploded, and it went all over the world.
And still is going and going and going to this day, and will never stop. I want to know, since we're talking about this, who are some modern artists that you enjoy? Who's carrying the torch of storytellers who are writing songs that 50 years from now people will still be singing?
I can't answer that question because I don't really. There are about 1,000 TV stations and lots of radio stations, and I'm always exposed to stuff. And you know, my girlfriend plays all kinds of stuff that younger people listen to, and I've heard all kinds of groups, and nothing sticks in my head. It all sounds like a huge wash of some sort that's not melodic enough for me to remember. Mm. And that's the problem. So I end up saying this, I sound like an old geezer who's, they don't make them like the Eastern kind of guy, you know. But the thing about it is this is a new kind of thing, and it's not my thing, but it's their thing, and sure, they're welcome to it. I don't understand it, and I'm not supposed to.
Mm. Well, I do have, and we want to be respectful of your time, but I have a question that we ask everybody that comes on. So we got to ask you this really quickly. So you're on tour and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking about that, I'll tell mine. I get a Three Musketeers bar every time, because when I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and I would pick a Three Musketeers because it's the most ounces for the money. So that's my logic behind what I get. What do you get when you're on tour and you go into a gas station? What do you grab, Don?
I grab what are those things? Cheetos.
Cheetos. Oh, yes. There we go. Oh. Oh, man. We've been waiting somebody to say Cheetos for a while. You're the first.
Yeah, I like Cheetos. That's good. And I also like a Hershey's almond bar.
Okay. That's a good one. That's a little diversity. I like it.
Yeah. We have, we've asked literally every guest we've ever had that question.
Yeah.
Except for one. We forgot one, and I think you might know. We forgot to ask Mark Farner of Grand Funk Railroad what he would get. What do you think Mark Farner would get at a gas station? Do you know?
Well, what did you guys say?
We said something super American and patriotic, I think beef jerky or, beef jerky and a Coca-Cola maybe. I don't know.
We were just guessing something American related.
Well, now your beef jerky opens up a whole wide area.
There we go. That's right.
I like turkey jerky.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little healthier.
So you can kind of justify your jerky eating, like, oh, it's the turkey version. It's healthier.
I like turkey jerky, and I also have a secret love for a certain kind of they don't make them everywhere, and they're usually two bags for a dollar, like these French peanuts. You know, they're coated with some kind of hard coating.
Oh yeah, those are delicious.
And they're cheap, man, and they're probably got all kinds of chemicals in them. But
yeah, outstanding. All right, we got one more question, and then we're going to cut you free. Thank you so much for being with us today. But I got to know,
pleasure,
because I'm a huge fan of yours and this other artist, so I got to ask this question. I think you're the only artist that we have spoken to who has been parodied by Weird Al Yankovic. And I would just like to know how that process works and how you feel about it. If you had any reservations about it, or if you sort of took it as a badge of honor.
Well, he's very good at what he does. He's also a very nice person, and we got to be friends. He sends me a Christmas card every year.
No kidding. That's awesome. What a guy.
And he's a sweet man. He really is. And he's, what happens with this kind of a situation? See, I'm a publisher, as well as being a singer and a songwriter. Okay. I have my own publishing company. I own all my songs.
That's nice.
And a bunch of other stuff. So if anybody uses American Pie for a parody, I own it.
Oh wow! Okay.
So basically, so I own The Saga Begins.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Okay.
publishing is quite a fascinating. I just do my own stuff. I'm not like Paul McCartney who buys publishing catalogs. Uh-huh. But there's a song a few years ago by Drake called "Do It Wrong."
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Do It Wrong uses two of your songs,
right?
Use two of my songs. I own 60% of that.
Wow.
That's awesome. It was the wrong thing you do and when a good thing goes bad, right?
Yeah, off the Primetime album, and it sold 4 million records, and I got the 4 million records, and I got the big award up in my room. I'm looking at it right now. It's Drake awesome. Right there.
Wow.
Dude, that's so
that's
cool.
Really nice for you, because nobody owns their own publishing anymore. Like, that's, well, that, you know.
That's one of the reasons why I got turned down in the beginning with the Tapestry album. I wasn't going to give it up. And I, you know, I'd been to business school. I had a degree in finance, and I could read these contracts. And let me tell you, boys, the original recording contracts and publishing contracts were among the most repressive ever invented.
Wow.
And managerial contracts. A manager would have, if a kid went in there and signed these things, okay, you know, signed up, the manager actually had power of attorney. He could Whoa. Divorce you. Wow. He could sell your
Holy
house.
Cow.
You know, yeah, that's what you gave him. When you went in with the record company, the Beatles got a 3% royalty.
Oh, my
the
word.
EMI got 97% of the money.
Wow.
And if the album cost 50 grand to make, the Beatles 3% paid off that 50 grand,
right.
and the record company owned it.
Jeez. Oh, man. Yeah.
So that's the publishing the same way. They would advance you money, and you would write these songs, and they'd give you your little diddly weekly salary.
Right.
And they'd own the copyrights.
Man.
That's crazy.
So, you know, and you'd pay back every penny out of royalties earned by that song, but they would own the song. So it was unbelievable. And I said, I don't like that, so I'm not doing that.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Yeah,
that's
good job.
Great.
Stand your ground. Well, we promised we'd give you a second to talk on anything you wanted to before we leave, and then we'll let you go. I know you talked on the Time Life Project. I know you're really big into Teen Cancer for America, and you did your duet with Ed Sheeran, and you nailed Vincent. Super cool. But is there anything that you would like to pitch or tell us what's going on with Don?
Yeah, well, we'll be doing a 50th anniversary tour next year, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the American Pie album. And that will be all around the world. And then, of course, there's this uploading of the 11 albums and 173 tracks on every streaming platform, which is happening right now. There's a new Don McLean YouTube channel.
All right.
And yep, and then there's in the fall there'll be a box set of these albums along with a new album called Still Playing Favorites.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Oh, that's good.
That's what's happening.
Outstanding. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Don McLean.
Thank you so much, Don. We appreciate your time. You've been wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been really nice to talk to such a legend.
Well, thank you for being up on the other albums and the other music I've made. I really appreciate it. Nice questions, and you sound like you're having a good time, so keep doing it.
Oh, we love it. We've got many more, but we'll save them for the next time when we have Don McLean round two.
That's right.
All right. I'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Don. We appreciate it. Have a nice day.
Bye-bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And ladies and gentlemen, that was Don McLean.
I can't believe we're saying that. That's amazing. America.
Man, let me just say, you know, we say this occasionally and we get sentimental and we're both sentimental, but thank you guys for listening.
For real.
If you guys had not come along this far and encouraged us and you know, come alongside us and supported the show, I don't think we would be reaching this far and doing this. You know what I mean? Like, once we started doing interviews and
we'd be like, let's get the youth pastor on and ask him about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead we're getting like,
exactly. I know a guy who tied Elvis' shoe once. Let's try but we've been able to, like,
my uncle could fart the chorus of that song. Let's get him.
Yeah, but we've been encouraged to, like, you know, to reach farther and all that kind of stuff, all that sort of sentimental, inspirational nonsense that I always make fun of. But you guys have really, you know, we want to do great stuff that you guys are interested in hearing, as well as stuff that pops us.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't think without you guys, we would have just on our own ended up interviewing people like Don McLean,
which is wonderful. You know? So thank you. So, we thank you, because this is so fun for us.
Yeah, you guys are definitely making this possible.
Okay, so
help us keep going.
Let's dig into a little bit about the song. I don't know if we want to kind of I don't know if we go verse by verse. It's pretty lengthy, or if you just want to hit some highlights of quotes or lines.
I think some of both. Why don't we just
take it
where it goes.
Run with it, and what we hit, we land on.
Okay, so the lyrics, like we said, for a long time were a mystery. But in 2015, he sold his original manuscript notes for the song, his original handwritten lyrics and songwriting notes, sold them at auction through Christie's in London. And they sold for like $1.5 million, I believe. Might have been $1.25. I can't exactly
Which
remember.
Is probably about half of what my notes of handwritten notes on the podcast.
Yeah.
I've got all my handwritten notes right here in my Eric Davis folder.
From day one.
Day one, just all piled in there.
So. By the way, you know what? So we've talked about your folder before, and your folder is an Eric Davis Cincinnati Reds
baseball card
replica. It's a Topps baseball card replica, which makes me remember I have a prize of unspeakable value.
What is happening right now? I'm normally the prize of unspeakable value giver. So, am I about to receive something?
You're about to receive a book that I think you're going to love so much. This book is called The Wax Pack.
Oh, yes. Okay? Outstanding.
I have been following the author on Twitter for several years now, as he was getting into the rounding up of the book and the creation of the book, and it is the story of a pack. He grabbed a random pack of Topps baseball cards from I think 88 or maybe 89, something like that.
Dude, Gary Templeton, yes,
made it his mission to catch up with each of the players in the pack and see what was going on now for them and talk to them about their careers.
Amazing.
And so the result is this book called The Wax Pack, and it is stylized front and back cover.
It's 86 pack.
86. It is stylized like a pack of Topps baseball cards.
That's awesome.
And so that could not have been a better segue for me to give you that prize of unspeakable value.
So good.
Hope you enjoy. I'm going to get the audiobook version because I don't read. So I'm going to buy the audiobook
and
read through
ever.
It myself. And maybe we'll just do a special episode on it. Maybe we'll just do a bonus episode on the wax pack. Anyway, back to American Pie, which is, baseball talk is not out of bounds if we're talking about American Pie. You know, there's actually a baseball reference in the song, sort of, kind of. Back to what we were talking about. Don McLean sold the original lyrics at auction, brought in $1.25 to $1.5 million, and then he started opening up about the lyrics a little bit after all these years of being like, I'm going to leave them to mystery. Mm-hmm. Then he at least said, you know, here's kind of where we're at. He didn't get super specific, but he did say the lyrics had to do with the state of society at the time. He said, basically, in American Pie, things are heading in the wrong direction. It is becoming less idyllic. I don't know whether you consider that wrong or right, but it's a morality song in a sense. Then he said, I was around in 1970, and now I'm around in 2015. This is in a People magazine article. He said, there is no poetry and very little romance in anything anymore, so it is really like the last phase of American Pie. So part of it, you know, like we said, there are some very specific things that catalyzed the writing of the song. And then there's a sort of general thing that he was feeling that, like, the, you know, in the way that we talked about the end of The Innocents, right? America was changing, and what he felt was the morality of America was shifting as well into some, I guess for him, into some less than savory, you know, territory. And the sort of, you know, the love and freedom of the 60s was sort of giving way to the cynicism of the 70s. And you've got Vietnam, you know, all these things that are happening. And of course, you have the assassination of President Kennedy, you know, that have happened all since this 1959 incident. You know, and it's just changing things and changing mindsets. So part of that is overall, you know, kind of a theme, not necessarily the theme, but a major theme running throughout the things. And that's not as fun to talk about. So why don't we get into, like, some of the characters and some of the stuff.
Yep. Lennon read a book on Marx.
Such a great song.
That's a Lennon.
Such a great verse.
Is obviously spelled out L-E-N-N-O-N. Those of y'all that hear... Right? Is it spelled?
Go ahead.
Lennon. When you hear Lennon and Marx, you automatically think Lennon, L-E-N-I-N.
The dictator.
The dictator. But then they tie it in with Quartet Practiced in the Park, which is the Beatles, correct? Thus meaning the Lennon that wrote the book is John Lennon.
Yes. So, and we know.
And it's followed up with Helter Skelter part, which is about the Manson murders, correct? Yep. Which Helter Skelter, Beatles song.
Right. That was tied in. Basically, I said, I think Charles Manson said sort of Helter Skelter told him.
He was listening to that song.
He was listening. Okay, that's
and
right.
And thus the Manson murders, because he was listening to that song.
But if you look up the... So it says, while Lennon read a book on Marx, the quartet practiced in the park, and we sang dirges in the dark the day the music died, which was another one of those. There are several of these in this song, of those lines that could have launched a podcast. Mm-hmm. You could chew on that one,
section,
couplet, yeah, or whatever, for, you know, a long time. But I found this interesting, reading a digital copy of his manuscript lyrics. It's interesting to me that Lennon is neither spelled like the Beatle or the Dictator.
Oh, okay.
It is spelled L-E-N-N-I-N. It's got both.
Okay.
It's spelled like both.
Okay.
Which I know there
with
are a couple...
With the double N for John and the I for the Dictator.
Yes. And so I know there are a couple other manuscripts out there, but the one that I could find, that's how it's spelled.
That's cool.
Almost like he wrote it like he intended it.
I have the vinyl upstairs. Let me go grab it real quick and read the lyrics. Hang on.
Just I'll pause.
All right, guys, a little anticlimactic. I do have the vinyl, as Rob can verify, but the inner liner notes on this do not have the lyrics.
That's right.
Which is one of my favorite things to read. I can't believe I didn't check this before, but not on there. So I was like, hey, no sweat. I got the CD.
Yeah.
I grabbed the CD, open it up, inner liner notes, the exact same as the record.
It's even got just a blank page on the inside of the CD.
There's a blank page on the other side, as if to say, if you were looking for lyrics, JP, right.
You found
all you get.
Nothing.
All the answers to your questions about this song is on the left side of this page. A blank slate.
Maybe it's like invisible ink. If you hold it close to a candle, it will reveal. And then we have to steal the back of the Declaration of Independence.
That's right.
It's a whole thing.
You have to hold it over a steaming hot apple pie. And then the lyrics
pop. It's got to be apple.
It's got to be apple.
The particular seasonings and whatever in the apple.
It brings out the lyrics.
Yeah. So, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and roll with my idea.
Okay.
And maybe if somebody can prove me wrong, whatever, but if his original manuscript says L-E-N-N-I-N, then I'm going to, in my heart, believe that he wrote it down as he intended it to be interpreted, that it's to be interpreted as a play on both.
Yep,
you know
I get it.
I love that's such a fantastic story that I don't even care if it's not true.
I like your story. I'm with it. I'm in. Book of Love, Pink Carnations reference.
Yeah, let's maybe we can listen through, not listen through, but talk through some of these verses, because they're so abundant, and without being able to play the snippets of the song like we normally do, it might help us to just look at some of the lyrics and kind of talk through some of them. Let's just go through some of these things. You already mentioned the Book of Love, the 1958 song, and then the Bible Tells Me So, which was actually a song in itself released in 1955. You think they played that on the radio in 1955?
Maybe.
Jesus Loves Me, This I Know, For the Bible Tells Me So?
Maybe could have got
away. Was that a thing? I don't know.
We talked about the drove the Chevy to the levee because we went rammed to the dam.
Right. Blue moon. We mentioned the jester, but we haven't really talked about it.
Okay.
I think
Bob Dylan, right?
Right.
I think we pretty much agreed that is a reference to Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Especially the line, I think, that helped on the sidelines in a cast, because he had just had a motorcycle wreck.
Right.
And he was actually in a cast.
Yes. And I didn't know this about Dylan. I don't roll very deep with Dylan yet, but that he was kind of out for about 2 years. So he was on the sidelines in a cast, you know, and he had been...
Well, and that's when he transitioned to electric music.
Yeah.
So, like, he's leaving the folk love that air, like that acoustic Dylan sound.
Yeah.
He's like, now he's diving into electric music and then future into gospel music even. So it's a kind of out of the scene.
And so there's a few lines about the jester. He's mentioned several times. And I don't think, you know, I read some quotes from Dylan where he sort of took offense to being referred to as the jester. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just the guy that wrote like a Rolling Stone and the times they are changing and whatever, you know, some jester. He's like, you should ask him. Don't ask, you know. But I think it's more of there's a whole verse. Let me find the third verse here. But about the jester playing for the king and queen. And let me find which is 18th verse here somewhere.
when the jester sang for the king and queen and the coat he borrowed from James.
From James Dean.
That's the brown jacket that he's wearing on the album cover.
Which was similar to the jacket that James Dean wore in like Rebel Without a Cause.
Who's the king and queen in that? Is that Elvis?
I believe the king is Elvis. I think McLean confirmed later that the king was Elvis. I'm not sure about the queen.
Which makes sense on the king while he's looking down. Because he's since passed, right?
Yes.
At that time, Elvis is dead.
He's not dead yet. No, he's not dead yet.
He's not dead yet.
No. But basically that Bob Dylan came in.
Took his stage.
Yes, you know
it's
what I mean?
And the thorny crown's a reference to like, it's a crown, but it's not always pleasant.
Uh-huh.
And obviously the biblical tie-in.
But. Yes. And there's so much great, really well done religious imagery through the whole song, and it sort of, underlines the sort of sacred tension that he's holding, in all of this.
Which is maybe a good chance to jump to the sixth verse, which not to go out of order, but that's the one that mentioned the three men I admire most, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, which is, who do you think, that's a reference back to the three in the plane crash?
I do.
Because I think another take that I've heard and thought that was kind of cool is it's also the same time. Because you jump ahead 10 years, okay? Mm-hmm. 99 to 69. Three people that died. Martin Luther King, John Fitzgerald, JFK, and RFK. So those are the three that it could have been. I heard another call, like I was just going back on this, and another argument was like, no, it's not any of those. It's Frank, Dean, and Sammy.
Because
that's their
turn.
So there's different arguments. I tend to think more along the lines of, since it's about the day the music died and ending with the three men I admire most, and then they use the Father, Son, Holy Ghost reference, which I think more along the lines.
That's what he's saying, like, these guys who were sacred to me, these guys who meant everything to me, and then you have the imagery of they took the last train to the coast.
Yeah.
I just see them, in a foggy mist, heading away in a train, waving, goodbye, see you on the other side, that kind of
looking
thing.
Out the back window or hanging out the side. That's good, man.
Just hang, so that's definitely would be my interpretation. This article from The Independent suggests that maybe Joan Baez is the queen.
Is the queen? Okay, because I didn't know if she was the girl that sang the blues, or is that Joplin?
I believe that to be Janis Joplin. Yeah, I met a girl who sang the blues, and I think that's her. There's so many. I'm telling you, these lyrics are poetry.
Mm-hmm.
There are, tight references in this. It's just chock full that you can literally, and that's one of the reasons why he wanted to release the original manuscript, was that he wanted to help people see that, like, this isn't just necessarily a song I wrote, but this was a piece of work, and it's
not in a bad way, not you piece of work.
Yeah, piece of work, no. But that it was, that it was artful and intentional in a lot of these things,
The fifth verse is about the Altamont Speedway Free Festival, which was the same year as Woodstock.
Yeah, and the Altamont Festival, if I'm not mistaken, that was the scene in which, while the Rolling Stones played, there was a stampede and people died.
Was it the Hells Angels? Is that who it was? They got into the big fight.
Yes.
And
so there was a stampede and people got trampled to death. And so reading that verse in that context is very, because you've got
The Jack Be Nimble, Jack Be Quick is a reference to, they were playing Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yes.
When that happened.
And it says Jack Flash sat on a candlestick.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the lyrics become hang on, let me find it. Sorry.
Yeah,
jumping
I'll
around
read
everywhere.
And as I watched him, you read the whole part?
Yeah, go ahead. Uh-huh.
Jack, come on me, Jack Be Nimble, Jack Be Quick, Jack Flash sat on a candlestick, because fire is the devil's only friend. And that's, and then, as I watched him on the stage, my hands were clenched in fists of rage.
Yeah.
No angel born in hell could break that Satan spell. So
in other words,
Hell's Angels reference there.
Right. Uh-huh, Hell's Angels. And that he's watching this in horror as this awful thing goes down at what should be a beautiful, thing. Now, I'm not sure what the... I'm not sure if the lyrics reveal his feelings about the Rolling Stones in particular. I don't know.
No, I think it's more.
I think it's fairly neutral.
Yeah, I don't think he's mad at them.
It's just
as
a
much
picture.
As the sacrificial rite, obviously, is the gentleman that died, because there's at least one man that died,
yeah.
Right?
I think there were might have been several. Were I there? Think there were several people mm-hmm. who died. Yeah, and so yeah, exactly. That's it becomes this horrible act of like satanic sacrifice, mm-hmm. to use sort of his language there. And so there's just all this incredible imagery. I encourage you, go listen to the song while you really think through and even read the lyrics.
Instead of just, reading it makes a big difference, obviously.
Really does.
Because, we sing it. We sing it all the time. It's easy.
You sing it and you don't think about it.
Easy, catchy chorus, easy chords. I mean, the theory section would take all of about 12 seconds for Rob to dissect on this. It's easy. Anybody can play it on guitar, but yeah, it's deeper than just this fun.
It's much deeper, and we can't do it all right now. There's whole books dedicated to breaking down this song, so you can check out some of that if you really 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 want to go deep. That stuff is sort of out there.
But before we let you guys go, we're gonna have to play a game.
Let's do it,
and then we'll come back.
And
with
then we're
some
gonna talk
things.
About a couple of covers,
couple things, absolutely. But let's break and play the game. We're gonna play a different version of Stump the Genius.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, guys, we're gonna play a different version of Stump the Genius. But I told y'all last week. This week we're gonna be cheering for the genius.
Okay.
So normally the way this game goes is I pick either somewhere between 5 to 10 songs. I started with 10 and then went to 5 that I don't think Rob will know, that I'll know, that Rob will not know. And I've done pretty well in the game, pretty well at stumping this genius.
Yeah. I'm like the Washington Generals in Stump the Genius,
that's
know?
That's funny. It's a good reference. Good baseball reference for you guys there.
Basketball. Right?
Yeah, I know. That was a joke.
Sorry. I missed it.
Little joke there. On we go with this version. So this song, I'm going to play 10 songs. I think I got 10 on here.
Okay.
Which may seem lengthy, but it's a good game. Just little clips of each. I'm going to bet that Rob will know whether this song is about America or another country.
Okay. I thought you were going to say about another pie.
No, this is either about America or some place not in America.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to do it before we get to the chorus that says, or any place that says the country of mention.
Okay. And we're talking about the USA in particular.
The USA.
Right? Not like North America,
South
America.
This is like USA. Or this is some other place.
Okay.
So we're cheering for Rob. Here we go. We're going to come out. I think he's going to nail this. First ones, hopefully, we'll get right out the gate. Here we go.
Born in the USA.
Which is
Bruce
about?
Bruce Springsteen. Which is about the USA.
USA.
Yes.
Boom. Good job. Okay. This one might be the hardest. So maybe early to put in. But if anybody will get it, it's Rob. Come on, Rob.
Oh, yeah. Germany.
That's Germany!
Germany,
yes!
By King's X.
Lost to Germany, King's X. Thank you, Rob. 2 for 2.
That's Party in the USA, Miley Cyrus.
There we go. Yep. USA again. We're 3 for 3 for the USA. Oh, man. I have to be careful on this one because it may say it too early. See if I can jump to a different spot.
Back in the USSR. Okay. Yeah, I would have got it.
He would have got it anyway. So
I would have got it on the intro.
He would have. Sorry. I was trying to jump ahead so we didn't hear. 4 for 4.
Oh. Breaking my heart. Oh my gosh. That's going to be Leningrad.
That
by
is
Billy Joel.
Leningrad by Billy Joel.
Such a great song, dude.
And in keeping, why don't we just go here?
Oh man.
That's good enough to give it to you.
Good night, Saigon. That would be about Vietnam. That's about both Vietnam and the United States.
There you go. So that's a tricky, but that's okay.
Oh goodness.
Good
You're
job.
Killing me. You're
good
killing me with these Billy
job.
Joel songs.
Back to back Joel, Rob killing it. Here we go. You know this one? He's flawless so far.
Is this James Taylor?
This is James Taylor.
But what's the song?
We believe in you, Rob.
Way down here, we got no reason to move. Be a fool, running your stakes.
I can't let you hear the chorus because he gives it away.
Lose your load, leave your mind behind, baby James.
Oh
my God.
Oh, man. All right, we were doing good. It's okay. We missed one, but we're going to keep going. He's going to get the last three. Last three. No doubt.
Okay. Living in America.
Living in America.
James Brown.
James Brown.
Solid.
America. Here we go.
Yeah, okay. American Woman.
American Woman went with the
Lenny
Kravitz
version. That's the Lenny Kravitz
version. The Lenny Kravitz version.
Which is your favorite version?
Guess who? Definitely.
Okay.
No doubt.
No, it's not what I was thinking at first.
You'll get it.
Is this R-O-C-K in the USA?
R-O-C-K okay. in the USA.
John
Pretty
Mellencamp.
Darn good. 9 for 10 for America.
Okay, all right.
All righty. The only one we missed there was James Taylor.
James Taylor.
It was James Taylor? It's all right. Mexico. All right.
I was hoping for a little the theme song to Team America World Police, maybe, but...
great job, everybody. I
all
think
right.
we're happy with the 90%.
I'll take a B.
That's an A in most classes, right?
Yeah, not when I grew up. Hell, I feel.
Oh,
I
wait,
feel
it
like
went 93 to 100, wasn't it?
Mine was 94 to 100.
Oh, man.
I found like drugs, what grades have changed.
drugs have changed too.
Apparently. Okay, all right, that's good stuff. I feel good. There's a cool live performance of American Pie. On from the BBC, actually. He's in the UK performing it for one of the first times that he's done it live.
Okay.
And I don't know for sure that if it's lights and sweat and he's doing an 8-minute song or if this is legit. But the headline of this thing is McLean sheds hot, angry tears during powerful American Pie performance.
Wow.
And regardless of whether or not it's sweat, it falls perfectly like a tear.
Yeah.
When he's getting toward the end of the song.
That's cool.
And it's like that last chorus, and he's getting into it. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, his eye maybe looks a little puffy.
Yeah.
And he's getting into the 3 men I admire most and all this stuff. And then there's
awesome.
just this rolling down his cheek in the most perfect way.
That's great.
It's incredible. So go watch that. Look for American Pie Live, 1972 BBC. You can find it on YouTube. It's very cool. Okay.
Covers, renditions?
We have to talk about something terrible, and then we're going to talk about something awesome. Madonna covered the song in 2000.
Terrible.
And it is the worst piece of garbage I have ever heard in my life.
Rob doesn't like Madonna as a rule anyway.
You know, it's
I
weird.
Do. I'm a Madonna fan. So.
I turned a weird corner on Madonna a few years ago, and I mean, there was a sudden and quick shift in my feelings about Madonna.
It's when she kissed Britney Spears.
And I don't even know exactly when it was, but something happened, and I literally have not just not listened to her music since, but I have turned her off every time I've heard her since. There was something that just physically happened that makes me repulsed by her music. And I don't know what it was.
Well, tell us the good thing. Though
should we play? Should I hear?
You don't want to hear Madonna. I don't want to put you in a bad mood.
Okay,
so it's okay.
It's awful.
Okay, so
I mean, really, you've heard it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's terrible.
Okay,
it has no heart. It cuts out half the song.
It's all good.
It's got nothing. But it went to number 29 in the United States in the Hot 100, despite not even being officially released as a single.
Well, why don't we play 15 seconds of the next good one?
I'm playing more than 15 seconds in the next good one. I might give you 15 seconds of Madonna. It went number one in the UK, Australia, Iceland, Italy, Germany, Switzerland, and more. It is
wow.
It was the 19th best-selling single in the UK for the year 2000.
Wow.
Madonna's version of American Pie. That is, I mean... ugh. You know what I'm saying? Ugh. That's all. But then the universe redeemed itself and gave us this.
A long, long time ago,
ah.
In a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. Their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the Queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy.
Sing the chorus, Al.
Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is The Saga Begins by Weird Al Yankovic from the album Running with Scissors. And it is a beautiful piece of parody and comedy and Star Wars nostalgia all rolled into one. Even Don McLean has said that his kids played it so much that he sometimes gets confused in concert as to which lyric he is supposed to be singing. He approves. We talked to him about it in the interview. And so Weird Al closes, as far as I know, every concert with that. He comes out and does a two-song set of his Star Wars songs, the first being... he starts with this one, actually, The Saga Begins, which is a telling of Episode One, The Phantom Menace, through the eyes of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it lands the last verse, and it uses several of the verses. It doesn't use every single verse, but it's got several sort of lyrical callbacks and obviously melodic callbacks to you know which part of the song he's referring to. And the last verse says, and in the end some Gungans died.
Some ships blew up and some pilots fried. A lot of folks were croaking. The battle droids were broken. And the Jedi I admire most met up with Darth Maul and now he's toast. Well, I'm still here and he's a ghost. I guess I'll train. This boy.
So it lands with the ending, and it goes through the whole movie. And he wrote the thing based on internet spoilers. It was before The Phantom Menace came out in 1999.
Wow, that's cool.
He wrote the whole thing on internet rumor sites, and then paid an exorbitant price to go to a preview screening for like charity. And made sure that he had his stuff together and only had to make minor changes. His research had so good. And it's super detailed. And so just the genius of Weird Al really shines in that. So he closes his concert. Everybody comes out dressed in Star Wars stuff.
Gear, yeah.
He has like four or five stormtroopers and a Darth Vader that come out. Him and his band are all dressed in like more of your like Tatooine clothing, your farm boy, Uncle Owen kind of clothing. And then they're like hoods. And Ruben Valtierra, his keyboard player, is in like a full like Sith Lord sort of hood, you know what I mean? Hooded figure. And they do this whole thing, and then they play Yoda, his parody of Lola by the Kinks, and they end the shows that way. And it's just brilliant, dude. Weird
we got
Al.
To see it together at the
we did at the
Ascend,
Nashville Amphitheater.
Ascend Amphitheater with the Nashville Symphony.
Yeah, with the Nashville Symphony. We got to see Weird Al do this song with the Nashville Symphony, and it was incredible.
Happy Veterans Day, guys.
Hey, Veterans Day.
Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for your service again. Thank you for your support of the Great Song Podcast.
Absolutely. We are not veterans. We are not strong enough or fit enough to
not
have served in the military.
Not fans of push-ups nor sit-ups, but we appreciate y'all that do those.
But man, by golly, if you or somebody you love is a part of the military who is keeping this... our country of origin, safe and free. We certainly do appreciate it. I have one more note on this song. Do you have anything else?
I'm good.
I have one quick note.
Okay.
Don McLean has never owned a Chevy.
Really?
Really.
Well, there you go.
Really.
American cars at all?
I don't know about that.
He took his Ram to the dam.
But he said he's never owned a Chevy. First thing he did with his earnings... Once he accumulated enough earnings was to go buy a Mercedes.
Okay.
He went with the German car.
Oh, but then we got to tie in the best line that I've heard. I forgot about this. Don McLean said, when they asked him about his song, what it means.
Yeah.
He's like, it means I'll never have to work again.
Indeed. Indeed. I've actually heard him say that basically this song, and this was sort of half in jest, it has to be, that this song ruined his career.
Yeah.
Because... heretofore, he was a true artistic troubadour, mm-hmm. you know, the underappreciated coffee house genius.
Yeah, I get it.
And he was...
Now he's a megastar.
He's writing from his soul, uh-huh. and it's too deep to be attained by mere mortals. And then all of a sudden he has this pop hit that makes him a megastar, and he has to play it every single time he steps foot anywhere.
Yeah.
And it in the eyes of the serious artist took him from being a serious artist, quote unquote, to a pop star, mm-hmm. And so discredited some of his best writing.
Yeah.
I mean, just listen to any of his stuff. The guy's
Vincent's
brilliant.
Huge. There
like
you.
Yes, Vincent and Sister Fatima. That is my other favorite jam on the Sister Fatima.
Interesting fact: on the back of my vinyl, it does say Sister Fatima. On the back of my CD, it leaves the T off of Fatima.
Really?
It says Sister
really?
Fatima.
Really? A misprint on the
misprint.
CD.
A misprint. How about that? That's worth some money. You guys that want a collector's item of a Don McLean CD with a misprint.
Yeah.
You have it.
Interesting. All right. Well, I think that's about going to do it for our coverage of American Pie by Don McLean. If you have any additional insight you want to add, if you have, you know, you think about certain songs. Oh, we didn't even mention the Birds. The Birds ran off in the Fallout Shelter, 8 miles High and Falling Fast. 8 miles High was a single by the Birds.
By the Birds, yep.
And then landed foul on the grass. The players forward pass. The sergeants marching on the field.
That's right.
Sergeant Peppers. So,
there we go.
All this. There's just
so much.
So much. We couldn't
8 minutes of goodness. We still went lengthy. Here,
we,
but
we
hope,
can't even
hope you guys had a good time.
All that stuff. So whatever you got to talk about on American Pie, let
throw
us
it
know.
At us.
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Great Song Pod, or you can find our Facebook group at Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly. If you want to go the extra mile and support the show on Patreon, we would greatly appreciate it. That's patreon.com/GreatSongPod. You can get yourself some cool access. You can get early releases of the show, bonus episodes, and much more. We'll be back again next week with another great song. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.